afternoon, everybody. Lovely to see you all again. Been away for a little while. So, just thinking previously, something to talk about for the preamble is this business with, say, factors for the samadhi practice. And if you look at the, say, the five factors for the jhanas for developing, say, quite deep meditation, you know, where you have applied attention, sustained attention, say joy, sukha, and one-pointedness of mind. And, you know, to get a really deep state of meditation, all those five factors need to be there. But how do you actually approach this? How do you work, or how do these factors actually develop as the practice goes along? So when we look at the number one, say, like applied attention on the meditation object, you know, essentially, you know, you're looking at bringing one's awareness, one's conscious awareness on to the object itself, whether it's a mantra or the you know, the breathing meditation. So, for example, when you do a mantra format, a repetitive mantra format, that as soon as you contact the mantra, you're quite aware. You know, you hear the sound, the mental sound in one's mind, and you know that your mind, you know, is actually in contact with the thought of the mantra as it continues. And it's quite clear. Sometimes when we do more refined objects like the breath, or sometimes even some people with walking, they find their attention slips and they don't notice so quickly. So, but naturally with any kind of very more sort of, some more coarse meditation practice, you know, you can tell when your mind is in, your conscious awareness is in contact with the object. So that's applied sustension. And sustained attention is when you're able to maintain mental contact with the meditation object essentially continually. You know, you're looking at a sustained application. And so it's like the continual conscious awareness of the object of one's choice. So it's like the, you know, it's something you sense within yourself. And when we talk about, say, conscious awareness, you know, one is essentially, you know, like fully aware of the object itself, how it arises, how it changes, at least to a surface level. You know, as soon as you lose it, or as soon as it escapes you, then sustained attention is lost. And this business with both applied and sustained attention, it's, you know, you're not looking at an incredible amount of mental energy that you have to put forth. I mean, it's incredibly light. It's just a matter of contacting the breath, contacting the mantra. You know, even with myself, you know, I don't have incredibly deep meditation, but these days, I mean, I just find it almost quite effortless. You just place your attention and it sticks. And so, you know, once your practice starts to come together, then that's, you know, that's the kind of say, like, parameters you're looking at. You're able to hold the object very gently, but, you know, easily 1, 2, 3 hours at a stretch, you know, while you're calming the mind down. And so as you're able to sustain your focus and the mind refines down, then essentially you're going to get different types of, say, joyful feeling, you know, arising both in the mind and the body. So, you know, you're looking at five levels of say, rapture, say, pleasurable feeling, and, you know, both from, say, like tingling on the surface of the skin to, say, like waves of rapture moving through the whole body and moving, experiencing, you know, naturally you experience the sensations within the mind, within the awareness of the mind, but, you know, these feelings of energy joyful, rapturous energy moving through the body, and virtually like you can get like a whole body experience, which people may feel is similar to almost say like opening the Kundalini, where you get constant energy just moving up through the spine and through the not only up to the head section, but through the limbs as well. And you know, as one person mentioned to me a number of years ago, that they were meditating. There was one late evening they were meditating, probably around 11 p.m. or just after, and the mind just suddenly, they must have been in a sort of like a state of samadhi where the factors just came together just momentarily for about, say, 5 or maybe 7 seconds maximum. And they had this incredible wave of energy, you know, just like moving through the up from the soles of the feet, the chi points at the soles of the feet, you know, just over a period of, say, minimum 5 to 7 seconds, right through the body, you know, moving up the spine, and then hitting the upper, say, cerebral area, where the, you know, conscious awareness in the upper head section, cerebral area, and then the mind just exploding into light. So the samadhi factors that just come together momentarily for a short period of time, but the energy flow in that very short burst that release of energy, or that, say, conduction of energy, was enough to essentially to keep them awake for, I mean, hours. You know, you wake up at, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning, and the person described as being, say, like plugged into the universe, where the natural energy, say, within the environment, just moves right through you. You just open all the channels, and you become like almost like a conduction rod. And that person was like wide awake for till about 6 a.m. and then they had a nap for about 30 minutes and then came up for the breakfast. So sometimes, you know, quite unusual things can happen. So it's virtually like the samadhi experience bordering on the, you know, moving into the samadhi nimitta stage, where the relaxation, the tranquility is at a level, the letting go is, you know, it's the bottom line, the letting go of the thinking process reaches a point where the samadhi nimitta arises, but not just that samadhi nimitta on the mind level, but just that incredible rush of energy moving through both the body and the mind. And so, you know, you can experience say rapturous, you know, both pity, rapturous feeling at that level if the samadhi is quite good. And but over time, as you gradually refine the mind and refine both the mental factors and the body and emotional energies, that you know, the that more sort of energetic rapturous feeling starts to move into say sukha, you know, pity. It's more like it's actually pity sukha, not sukha, as that you get in the third jhana. But you know, the pity sukha, which eventually takes you into the upachara samadhi and first jhana. So that it's more like, and the refinement. So as, you know, some people who experience that kind of very very strong rapturous feeling may be very very quite impressed by that, and you know, may feel that you know, they're in the ballpark, they're on their way to you know, say full unification of mind. But you can still go quite a lot further than that, and as you keep refining the meditation down, you get this super, the way they describe it, the super sensual piti sukha, which almost essentially no worldly experience could really, it doesn't make any difference what it is, whether it's drugs or sex or whatever it is, it can't possibly touch that state. So anyone, any of you who get that piti sukha, a genuine piti sukha state, you'll be able to see very very clearly that it's something which rises beyond the normal, our normal sensual world. And when the piti sukha you know, the samadhi nimitta arises and the piti sukha starts to develop, you know, drawing in, you know, that piti sukha, that incredible bliss draws you in and then draws you into the mind and into full unification, full one pointedness where the mind is very, very, it's almost, you can almost, the way you might describe it is your mind is like one pointed, like on an atom. It's not like being one pointed within the space frame of a millimeter. It's incredibly very, very sharp and fine and you know, very, very deep within itself. And you know, with that kind of perspective, an incredibly fine point but fully contained within itself. So with this business with the, you know, when people are focusing on their meditation objects, some people, they tend to use a broad focus or medium range, but from what I've seen over the years, that the meditation never really took off until you start to narrow the focus down as much as you possibly can, but do it in a comfortable way where you don't get excess both physical and emotional tension, but with the both on the level of samadhi and vipassana, that you never ever neglect the process of investigation, because you know samadhi is all using effort and energy in samadhi is all well and good, but it's got a workable limit. You know, you'll only get so far with it, and you've got to put a minimum level of effort into investigation. You know, you can basically swap back and forth. As you say, for example, you're doing your practice, maybe after about 5 minutes you may see quite clearly what's blocking you, what's obstructing you. The mind's it may be thinking about something in particular. And essentially, instead of just sitting there for another 30 minutes or 45 minutes, you just go straight to investigation, because you, through investigation, that's what actually releases the mind from excessive thinking. It allows you to say, place things down and not get overly attached to different thoughts and feelings in the mind. And people with that investigation, it can be very comprehensive, you know, from every possible perspective, you know, getting a full comprehension of any particular mind state you're attached to, and in order to relax that mind and release that excessive proliferation. But something I've been working with for at least the last well over 12 months now is the that anicca contemplation of anicca, which the Buddha recommended in the suttas, like, you know, over and over again. And you do that with, as I've mentioned previously, you do that with different dhamma sets. You know, you do it with the four right efforts, or the five controlling faculties, or the seven enlightenment factors. So within the 37 enlightenment factors, you find the subsets. Or you can do things like, you can choose things in nature, or if you really want to get the mind calm in a very, very short space of time, you choose one part of the body. It can be things like skeleton. It's not, this kind of practice is not everyone's cup of tea, but it's still very, very, very mild. And you just choose one, so for example, it could be bones, it could be skeleton, and it's changeable. Say skeleton is changeable in nature, or the heart, as the heart beats, expands and contracts, the heart is changeable in nature. And just use one single mantra, and because I've done all sorts, I've experimented with this a lot, you know, it's well over a year now, and you can use that bodily mantra practice just to get you an initial calm. You can use it for a minimum 5-10 minutes, and then you can go to a more soft and fluffy practice like the four elements, you know, earth, wind, water, fire. Those four mantras are changeable in nature. And because I've been going for about almost, say, 20 years now, and I can't get the practice any better than that. With that, you know, it's the kind of approach that I do constantly these days, and I swap and change with the perceptions of different things. You know, so for example, you might be a person with a chemist background, or biology, or horticulture, and you can choose the things you want to contemplate, but that anicca sanya will help you release things much, much more quickly than virtually any other method you'll try. So I'll tell you, we'll go through that. So what we'll do is we'll use a, maybe because most of you have been meditating for quite some time, maybe we'll just go straight to a sharp focus, and we'll just make some small adjustments with this perception of a nature. So what we'll do is with the we'll do a composite. We'll do with the breathing meditation that I want you to focus on the mouth section. It's because the mouth is, you can feel the sensations. It's very, very tangible. It's very obvious, and much more comfortable than trying to go to one point at the nose where people might get excessive tension. But the mouth is very easy to find and locate, and then just watch the breathing at that point, and at that area. And to start off with, we'll do the more firm practice just for a short period of time, just so you can see the. We'll just to keep it nice and comfortable. We'll do something like say the heart. So you know the heart is changeable in nature. So your physical heart is changeable in nature, and you'll possibly get a visualization over as the minutes go by. And we'll do that for, just so you can see the full effect of it, we'll do that for 10 minutes. And then we'll swap over to a soft and fluffy practice for the rest of the session. So just get yourself in a comfortable position with your back nice and straight, head upright, but comfortable. And if you put your hands in your lap, it helps to draw the energy in towards the center of the body. Just make sure you haven't got anything tight around the waist, wrists and the throat. And so we'll start with the heart, so focusing on the feeling of the breathing, the breath cycle, watching the breath cycle at the area, the location of the mouth. You can feel it on the periphery there. It's very, very obvious. And use that bodily mantra to get that very fast initial calm for 10 minutes. You know, your physical heart, you know, the heart is changeable, or the heart is changeable in nature. So as you're breathing in and out, have big spaces between the syllables. As you're breathing out, the heart, and then breathing in, breathing out is changeable, and then breathing in, breathing out in nature. So big spaces between the words, keep it nice and comfortable. And we'll do that for the next 10 minutes. So we'll move across to a more fluffy mantra formulation. So keep sustaining your attention on the mouth section with the breath on the periphery, but use this new mantra: elements are changeable, or elements are changeable in nature. Using the same format, big spaces between the syllables as you breathe in and out for the rest of the session. find that you're not settling down quickly enough, just go straight to investigation or the insight practice and try to understand exactly what those thoughts and feelings which are obstructing you are made of. You know, examine that mind state, the attachment to any particular experienced person, and you know, try to understand exactly what's happening there from a full perspective, because the more you see clearly what is happening there, the mind understands and it relaxes and lets go, and you drop to a slightly calmer level. towards the end of the session. So just reflect back and see what worked for you with the session, and I'll ring the gong 3 times so you can open your eyes when you're ready. Did anybody have any questions on the meditation at all?
So the mantra, is it to stop thinking?
Yeah, essentially what happens is the reason why I put emphasis on this, the anicca, developing this perception of changeability, because I'm trying to like maximize the detachment from the thinking process, from feeling to a degree, because when you've got especially strong feelings, or if you're overly intellectual, you may not be able to stop thinking very easily. And the anicca sanyo, you know, you can do this in 1,000 different ways, depending on your temperament, your makeup, and you essentially it increases the process of like letting go on the mind level. And the way it works is when you develop this attitude that all phenomena, all mind and body phenomena, is changeable, is like unsure, is not dependable. You start to loosen your grip on both on the mind and the physical body and the senses as well. And you can check with the sutta formulations when the Buddha talked about the development of meditation, development of insight. He always talks about that. You know, you develop the samadhi to the best of your ability, and then you go to the investigation of phenomena. So whatever you are attached to, that's what you really need to work on. You know, say for example, when I sit meditation, you know, if I don't see any stillness within the first 5 minutes, I just go straight to investigation, and I go to just a full peripheral investigation plus the anicca. So for example, I could have had a tiff with someone, and that person comes up in my mind, and then I do a similar principle: that person is changeable in nature, or that person is empty, or that person is the owner of their karma, or that if you just can't let them go, if it's really incredibly intense, or that person will die, or you know, at some point in the future, that person will die. And if you want to maximize the letting go, so if you've got, even if you know, people you work, or if you have incredibly intense feelings about anyone or anyone, you know, especially people, you can use that kind of death perception. It's just a tool. It's not like you want that person to die. You just want to essentially want to let them go. You don't want any problem or difficulty with them. So, but you'll see yourself. I mean, if you just, it's well worth working over weeks and months. You can do this in many, many different ways. But you know, I've been doing this for, you know, practicing in monasteries for like 20 years now, and I've never seen a practice which is as good as this. I can't get it any better than this. If I don't get calm, I go straight to the heavy duty stuff. I go to the body and I go to death. But you know, this is not everyone's it's not for everyone's temperament. So you can use the soft and fluffy ones. You can just do them in different ways, and especially to whatever you're attached to, you know. you loosen those attachments and get the mind to calm down very, very quickly. But just you can keep moving back between samadhi and insight. But it's something, you know, it's something. It's all very good for me to say these things, but you've got to see it within yourself. You've got to see the way it works, and because anicca permeates everything. You know, when we use these very general mantras, like I can say things like the earth is changeable. Earth, to see the earth element is changeable. And then you see the earth element in any solid, firm material, the carpets, the chairs, the vegetation outside, the earth element's going to be there in different densities. So, you know, you're increasing this attitude of the detachment, because the more attached you are, you're going to have a lot of difficulty settling down. You know, the way it works is you've got to let go. You know, but you've got to do it with wisdom. It's not forced. It's not effective enough. You know, it's like wisdom always has 2 to 3 times more mind power than just samadhi. You know, samadhi. You know, this is why this anicca. It's like a wisdom component. So you're constantly doing it all the time when you're sitting or walking or when you're on meditation retreat at Jhana Grove or anywhere else. And it just gets stronger and stronger and stronger as the months go by. So you're able to get still, get peaceful, you know, much, much more quickly as the weeks and months go by. And when you're looking at the big picture with the rebirth process, you know, constantly reinforcing that perception of changeability, you know, it's going to take you a long way when it comes to the end of your life. Because as the Buddha said, in order to break through to the enlightenment stages, you've got to do those three at the basic level, the anicca, dukkha, anatta, the changeability, the unsatisfactoriness, and the emptiness of all phenomena. You know, if you want to take this practice to its highest level, you know, you have to do this kind of practice for years and years and years in different ways, but when it comes time for you to, when your life term comes to an end in this particular life, all that surface to intermediate level, say contemplation and contemplation of the nature, you know, will take you a long way, and you'll see that when it comes time for you to die, you know, the mind will be in a much more firm, solid state. And as far as the path factors, you know, because that principle of the nature, it permeates everything in the universe. I mean, you've got to have samadhi in essence, you've got to have upachara. If you're talking about actually breaking through to dhamma, you've got to have upachara samadhi as a minimum. You know, you won't do it any other way. Like labeling and it can be useful to a degree, but it's just not deep enough. It doesn't cut the ice. You know, you have to do it the way the Buddha recommended in the suttas. You just you whip out the Nikayas, or you do word searches with your Kindle suttas, and it's just there, just over and over again, probably 100 times, 200 times in the suttas. And but a little, it may not necessarily, you may not necessarily, you know, get enlightened in day-to-day life, you know, right here and now, but that kind of contemplation will take you a long way. It's got a very, very firm basis. It's got a reality basis to it in the long term.
The silvers, you said the 4 silvers. What do you mean by 4 silvers?
Sorry, the what? The
4 silvers?
4 elements, yeah. Earth.
Oh, 4 elements. That's
what I was doing when I was sitting here. Earth, wind, water, fire. The reason why I only use one, because I don't want to overcomplicate things and then lose people during the session. So just do one to start with, just get a feel for it, and then just go to sets of dhammas. Go to 4 elements, go to 5 indriyas, faith, energy, mindfulness, samadhi, wisdom. Go to 7 enlightenment factors, go to, you can do things like you can break up a flower or a plant into its constituent parts, you know. Essentially, whatever your mind like orientates to, that's what you may need to do. But the body practice is very, very firm. It gets results very quick. But you've just got to be a bit careful. If you do one, you'll be quite comfortable. But you know, once you do sets of five, or you go through the body, it all depends. I can't go through the body with this one. My mind becomes actually quite disturbed. But I know lay people who can do this practice without any problem at all. I think it's got to do with faculties and sensitivity. I know a guy who's married with young children, and he gets very good results with his practice, and he doesn't get any trouble with it. But for myself, it provokes irritation, and it starts provoking anger. So, you know, because I've already got a basis, I wouldn't call it a really firm basis in calm, but for me, it doesn't work very well. It's like too forceful, you know. Maybe a set of five, you know, these five bodily mantras, you know, like head here, body here, nasty skin. You know, I can do that, but I can feel it. It's not it doesn't work so well. But for some people, it may be exactly what they need to do. But you just feel it out. You know, you don't want to go to, essentially, you don't want to go to sensuality, and you don't want to go to aversion. You want to keep coming back to the middle point, just over and over.
What do you mean by sets of five?
Sorry, the what?
What do you mean by sets? Like you were talking about sets of mantra. What do you mean by that?
Sets of dhammas. When you look at the 37 enlightenment factors within the Buddhist system of training, spiritual training, you've got subsets of factors. And if you look at Ajahn Chah Nisro's Wings to Awakening, He's got those sets very, very clearly set out in that book of his. So you can get it in PDF. You easily get it from the web. Just download it, put it on your phone or your tablet or your computer or whatever. And he goes through the chapters. So, you know, you only have to do this in a peripheral way. But, you know, you can go, say for example, the element of faith. You can go more deeply into that if you wish. You know, you can go, like even just faith as one factor, that you can break it down into sub factors. There's finer mental elements which make up the element of faith, you know. And you know, so for example, if faith is incredibly important to you, you get out your Kindle or whatnot, and then you word search, and you bring up all the searches under either say Chah Nisro's material is quite good, he's well researched, or even in the suttas, and then you see all the things which go to support and consolidate that element of faith. You know, there'll be a number of sub factors there, and you know, things like faith can be supported by study, meditation, discussing dhamma with your friends, you know, keeping the five precepts, you know. You know, when people keep the five precepts, you know, five precepts is, it's not just morality, it's a wisdom practice. You know, if you've got any nouns, and you know, you see how it works. You know, when you, people who keep precepts, they keep precepts because they see a value in say like undertaking the lay training in that area, and because essentially it makes life much more smooth, more easy, keeps you out of trouble, you know, stops you fighting and arguing and, you know, with other people and getting into trouble and whatnot. So, you know, it's got a wisdom component as well, not just a moral component, but also with meditation. You know, it helps support your practice in different ways. So, you know, you can find out the full business which supports just that single element within the system. Does anyone else need to say anything? Okay, we'll finish up.